At 2:29 p.m. on Friday, August 13, 1971, President Richard Nixon walked from the west wing of the White House to the South Lawn, where he boarded Marine One, the presidential helicopter. A young Marine officer crisply saluted the president as he ascended the 6 steps to the cabin door. The rotary blades atop the fuselage slowly churned horizontally, while those on the tail wing began to spin vertically. After a seemingly long moment, Marine One then slowly lifted straight up. Within seconds, its nose dropped, and the aircraft banked to the northwest, flying past the Washington Monument and a landscape of urban buildings. It then flew over small towns and continued over the thickly forested eastern Blue Ridge Mountains on its 30-minute journey. Aboard the helicopter, Nixon was crammed in with several men: Treasury Secretary John Connally, Federal Reserve Chairman Arthur Burns, Chairman of the Council of Economic Advisers Paul McCracken, Director of the Office of Management and Budget George Shultz, and White House Chief of Staff H.R. Haldeman. Also on board were 2 pilots and a flight engineer, 2 Secret Service agents, and 1 military aide who carried a suitcase with the nuclear codes. The seats were upholstered in gold cloth and rested on a rich blue carpet. Nixon had seated himself in an armchair on the right side of the aircraft. With his back to the cockpit, he could look out on the rest of the cabin. A telephone with a long coiled extension cord was affixed low on the wall at knee level, the only source of communication between the passenger cabin and the world outside. The space was cramped. Briefcases would have to rest on passengers' laps, and a person could barely move down the aisle unless he walked sideways. Another helicopter had taken off from Andrews Air Force Base in Maryland 1 hour earlier. On board were Paul Volcker, Undersecretary of the Treasury for Monetary Affairs, Peter Peterson, Assistant to the President for International Economic Affairs, Herbert Stein, a key member of the Council of Economic Advisers, William Safire, a White House speechwriter, and John Ehrlichman, Director of the White House Domestic Council. Several staffers had departed even earlier by car for the 90-minute trip. All these men were headed to a top-secret meeting at Camp David, the presidential retreat in Maryland's Catoctin Mountain Park. When Haldeman and his deputy, Lawrence Higby, contacted the 12 invitees the prior afternoon, each was told to pack an overnight bag, get ready to leave town for a few days, and under no circumstances tell their families where they were going. In the end, there would be 15 attendees, including Nixon, Haldeman, and Michael Bradfield, a Treasury lawyer who joined the group on Saturday morning. Only a few participants knew the specific agenda, but most understood that the meeting would be momentous. The day before, George Shultz, the powerful director of the Office of Management and Budget, described his view of the upcoming event to Nixon, saying, "This is the biggest step in economic policy since the end of World War II." On the way to their helicopter that very morning, Herbert Stein told William Safire, "This could be the most important weekend in the history of economics since Saturday, March 4, 1933, the day President Franklin D. Roosevelt closed all the banks in America. In fact, the group was about to ignite a series of explosions that would rock America's political alliances, set the U.S. dollar on a radically new course, and reshape the U.S. and global economies." This book tells the full story of that weekend, what led up to it, what transpired over those 3 days, what happened afterward, and what it all meant. It is, above all, an account of how the United States began to rethink its role in the world, how it realized it could no longer shoulder all the burdens that were thrust on it after World War II, and how it attempted to redistribute part of its awesome responsibilities to its allies. The events I have written about also illustrate a major inflection point in American history, a moment when the United States, its enormous power notwithstanding, was forced to recognize its growing interdependence with other countries and the need to move from using its raw unilateral leverage to engaging in more multilateral diplomacy and cooperation.